Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakefield Journal, and the Lakefield Journal had me confused today. I said, what? They put two compasses in the brief? No, there's a compass for the arts, and there's a compass for the events. So we have a lot to talk about this morning on This Week in the Lakefield Journal. We'll welcome in Janet Manco. Janet, good morning.
Good morning.
And Cynthia Hosmander. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so I was a little confused when I opened up the paper. I said, what? But it's two separate compasses, and I haven't seen that before in the past. I think this is the first time this has happened like this?
No, we have been doing this. You know, we used to, during the summertime, do a tabloid separate compass weekly.
Yep.
COVID certainly made that not possible, and so we went to the format of doing a larger compass about once a month during the summertime and into the fall. So during that time, Cynthia still does the inside the paper compass because she plans so far ahead. She already has those pages planned, you know, and is fine with doing them. So we have lots of arts and activity coverage this week.
All right. Well, we will go right to the front page, and Cynthia did an interview with Rick Cantelli, the board president of the Sharon Hospital, quoting with the big headline, "We all want the hospital here," end quote.
So this is a follow-up, of course, to this presentation by Nuvance that was done on the 29th, where they said, this is it, we actually are closing obstetrics at the hospital and reducing the ICU and the surgical hours. And we wanted to try and get a response from, if possible, the Sharon OBGYN doctors who were not comfortable at the time speaking. We had an article last week by Michael Parker, who is an independent physician in Sharon, has been here for a long time, very respected, saying that the doctors had all got together after they learned about the Nuvance proposed changes, and they had voted 25-1 to oppose them, which is a big deal. But we wanted to talk to the board and to the Foundation for Community Health, who are sort of really supposed to be the community's liaisons between Nuvance, the corporation that owns Sharon, or not the corporation, the nonprofit group that owns Sharon Hospital now, and Rick Cantelli, who's the head of the Sharon Hospital Community Board, spoke to us. And actually, Janet helped me with the headline, which I had a hard time in, because this is really Rick personally speaking to us and saying, you know, he's the head of Salisbury Bank and Trust, and he said, this really isn't about the bank, and it's not about community finance. It's about we all live here. We all want the hospital here. But when you look at what's going on, there's certain trends, not just in finances, but also in medicine, that are just drawing it inexorably in this direction. And he feels that, as he said, you know, both of my children were born in that wonderful maternity ward, and this is a really hard time. And we also had a response from Nancy Heaton from the Foundation for Community Health, who, you know, really said what we did was we helped Nuvance to purchase the hospital. It was a financial arrangement, but they both said, you know, we really don't have a lot of sway with the board for Nuvance. They're going to do what they're going to do, and we do our best to represent the community. But what Rick said was, everybody, if you really want this hospital to stay and to grow, you have to use it. Which, of course, we know it's a chicken and egg thing where, like, the fewer services they have, the less you want to use it. But of course, the less we use it, the less viable it is.
You know, to show you how important the hospital is, my brother's daughter bought a house in Cornwall and moved here. She's pregnant, and she moved here specifically because of the location of Sharon Hospital and birthing. And so, you know, there's so many different sides to this story. Some are emotional, and some are business sides, and emotion and business don't always mix.
Right. And, you know, as Carrie Eaton, the COO for Sharon Hospital, for Nuvance, had said during their presentation, 40% of women in Connecticut who are eligible to have their child at Sharon Hospital have it someplace else. So if you're in Cornwall, you can really choose between Charlotte Hungerford or Sharon Hospital. I would say there is a spectacularly good OBGYN group in Sharon, and I hope that they will continue to stay for a while longer.
All right, so that is main story. Before we get to the rabbi and the minister, it sounds like a joke, but before we get to that, that story, overall the enrollment is remained steady in Region 1, except for Housatonic Valley Regional High School, where I think there's a decent jump.
It's actually a slight. So I have to say, so we got the chart from from Sam Harrigan from the Region 1 board meeting, and we had to read it backward because they'd flipped it.
Yeah.
Like, I could be reading it wrong because it's not great in numbers, but I think Hoosier population actually dropped.
No, it's in 2021, it's 323, and the prediction for 21 and 22 is 346.
So 346.
Moving forward.
2019, 2020.
Yeah, so. Moving forward. But everybody else is pretty much in a status quo.
Right. And so on October 1st, that is the day when Region 1 School District does its census for the 6 elementary schools, or what's now called K-8 schools, and the regional high school. And that is how they decide on the budget planning for the coming fiscal year, so that the numbers, the budgets this year are based on last year's student enrollment numbers. The numbers for next year, the budgets that we'll be working on in January, February, March.
You know, when you look at the figures, from 2019 to 2022, there's only two schools which actually are going to lose population, and that's North Canaan and Sharon, Sharon Center School. Everybody else remains roughly the same or up a little bit, except for Salisbury, and Salisbury will be up by about 20-some and 20-some in 2022. But it's an interesting, this is a great chart and a great story to look at because you get to see 3 years worth of a swing.
Right, and it's an unusual year of swing because of COVID, and I think that we all expected there to be a big shoot-up last year on October 1st with new families moving here and part-time families staying full-time, and you don't completely see that in the numbers. So, you know, it's life is funny and unpredictable.
All right, now we can get to the rabbi and the minister.
So Douglas Grandchurch, who is the minister at the Smithfield Presbyterian Church, and a very fascinating guy, and is a close friend of our reporter, Leela Hawken. She emailed and said, you know, we had the Rabbi John Haddon from Amenia's Congregation Beth David, which is the synagogue for the region. And in what they really consider to be kind of a historic event, the two preached together from the pulpit at Smithfield and plan to do a reciprocal arrangement at Congregation Beth David. So at a time when so much is so fractured and breaking up into interest groups, it's nice to see partnership and joining together.
Nice story about the volunteers at Sharon Audubon.
Bethany Schaefer had sent us this nice story a while ago, and we've always wanted to do more stories with Audubon and talk about, you know, the way that Charlotte Reed used to do Have You Noticed, where she would say, like, there's this kind of bird out and that kind of bird out, and just for various reasons, a lot of it having to do with space, we haven't really been able to do it. And Bethany had written this wonderful story for us, you know, great notes earlier in the year on the chimney swifts, which are these cute birds that like to cling by their feet to the bricks in your chimney. And, of course, now everybody has a chimney liner, so it's they're having a hard time. And a lot of them are being rescued and brought to Audubon. And also, especially if you keep your flue open all the time, as I do, there's a danger that the nest will drop. So people have been bringing, I think there's a 20 to 75 chimney swifts are brought to Audubon each summer. And they have to, some of them have to be hand-fed. And this is one of those examples of how people can come and volunteer at Audubon. And they're having a Zoom tonight at 6:30 to talk about different ways that you can volunteer. But, of course, obviously, if you miss the Zoom, just give them a call. We have contact information for Bethany.
And I also, seeing we're talking about the Audubon, I want to remind people, their bird seed sales this weekend, 16th. And you can order it. And that's a big fundraiser for them as well.
Right, and at a time when we're not really buying as much maple syrup as we might have in past years because of COVID. And also in Compass, we have their pumpkin trail is coming up.
Yep. All right, Nature's Notebook, Leaves of Three, Let It Be, or you're going to need an ocean of calamine lotion.
Right, and of course we have a little note at the end of this from Patrick Sullivan, who's out in poison ivy all the time, and he said, actually, don't use calamine lotion. He gives you a couple of options for more contemporary solutions than were in the song by the Coasters that Matt Gordon is quoting. But again, we have this kind of sitting in the file for a little while, but a lot of people I know are out hiking right now, and I actually had some poison ivy in my yard as I was clearing back my peonies. So do read Matt Gordon's description of poison ivy, and it's very hard to recognize, in my opinion, but we have a photo.
Inside, nice picture of an osprey.
Right, from Mark Needhammer, who is such an amazing photographer, an Emmy Award-winning cameraman for, I think he was ABC, and still continues to send us photographs, even though he is no longer our classified ad manager. And if you look in that photo very closely, you can see there's a tiny little fish in the talons of that osprey.
Yeah, all right. And on the page right next to that, once again, our town's municipal elections, and you've got some ballots up there.
And the page after that. Bunch of absentee ballots, which are now available, and COVID is once again a reason why you can ask for an absentee ballot. But a very interesting, unexpected, a lot of petitioning candidates this year, and people who you wouldn't really expect to be petitioning, people who have been part, like Matthew Winter is petitioning for planning and zoning in Kent, and I think he used to be the chairman of the commission, Priscilla Pavel, who is a longtime selectman in Cornwall. So, you know, the nice thing is you have a lot of people who are running for office, and we are going to be doing profiles, I think, in the issue of the 28th, so people can take them. But just for those two towns with contested selectmen seats, which really is just Kent. And
Salisbury has four petitioning candidates.
Right, unexpected. Jackie Rice, longtime Housatonic Valley Regional High School teacher, head of the ambulance, and she's petitioning for Board of Ed. Rick Cantelli, the head of the bank, petitioning for a seat on Board of Finance. It's all very complicated. There's a lot of different restrictions and stuff. But interesting also in North Canaan, there is no candidate for the Region 1 board. And I think that's been Brian Bartram for the past couple of years, I believe.
Yeah, they still have a seat they have to fill. Yeah.
They have a seat they have to fill. So they presumably will appoint somebody, but you know, if they know they're going to appoint, they might as well just put somebody on the ballot.
Well, the problem is when Stacey Weiner ran in Salisbury, the story from the Democratic meeting that they asked the crowd that was there, does anybody want to run for Region 1 Board of Education? And there was dead silence for like a minute. And 2 years ago, Stacey said, okay, I'll do it.
Right.
People,
yeah.
I don't, you know.
And now she's petitioning.
And she's a petitioning candidate now. But yeah, people, I think, are very leery about going into these positions, and that's why anybody who runs for these positions and then serves, give them a lot of credit, because these positions are much, much more time-demanding and harder than they were many, many years ago.
Boy,
plain and simple.
Sure. And, you know, Board of Ed, that's a volunteer
yep.
position and very stressful at times. It, you know, you have a lot of responsibility, and it takes a lot of research and time.
Yep. Now, there's a couple of events coming up. One is coming up this weekend, and the other one is coming up on October 31st. We'll start off with the Little Guild and their Run and Wag, which is coming up on the 16th.
One of the most popular events around here, and people come out. It's like a giant party. As life in Cornwall more and more is turning into a giant party, but a fundraiser for the Little Guild and the Kent Pumpkin Run, actually on Halloween this year, encouraged to wear costumes.
All right. And, the Pumpkin Run is going to be great. It's going to be back. It was virtual last year, but virtual things are okay. I mean, and they had people from all over the country participate, but it's still nice to have the actual event where people can get out there and enjoy it, not only the runners, but the people who watch the runners.
Yeah, it's a fun day.
Cornwall, transfer station improvements, move ahead.
So this is something that's affecting all of our towns, which is there's a lot more trash, and the facilities are being... So, of course, Salisbury and Sharon have this beautiful brand-new facility, but it's pretty much busy all the time, and a beautiful new transfer station. But in Cornwall, they had to staff up, but they also had, you know, not surprisingly, an enormous amount of recycling that was suddenly coming in because everybody's ordering from Amazon and other internet mail services, so there's a lot of cardboard there. So they are moving toward having repairs, and who knows what usage there will be at the transfer station 5 years from now after COVID dies down.
Well, and also, the Connecticut Recycling Center is going to close, so the prices are going to go up for these towns because I guess the closest place they're going to have to ship the garbage to, the stuff, is somewhere in the Midwest. So there's a big spike coming in that as well for area towns.
Yeah, and Janet, I'd like to throw it to Janet for a minute because a lot of people online seem to be talking about what's happening in Millerton with the fire department, where there's a big increase, and that seems to be something that we're all going to be experiencing soon, too, which is the possibility of needing a paid service. But Janet, do you want to talk about that story?
Oh, this is a story by Whitney Joseph in the Millerton News this week that the Northeast fire taxes are jumping by 58%. And, we have seen discussion of this online, of course, and certainly in the coffee shops. But, you know, the ambulance is already a paid service in New York State, in Millerton and Northeast. And they're looking forward, the government there is looking forward to the fact that it's harder and harder to find volunteers for their fire department, and they need to prepare and know that it could be they have to go to a paid fire service, and this is how they're preparing. So by all means, everyone in Northeast should, discuss this with their officials and, think hard about it. It's not a simple answer
anything. And we've talked about it here on the radio a lot over the past couple of years, that the older the population gets, the less there's younger people around here, the more expensive it's going to be to put a fire company out there and to put an ambulance company out there. This is just a fact. It's the way it's going.
It's just a fact, and if we think it can't happen in Connecticut, Northeast is right across the state line.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a look at the editorial on the editorial pages, knowing when more help is needed to make it through.
Right. This is these are thoughts about Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we may sort of feel as if, well, COVID is coming upon its waning time, and we don't have to worry about things as much, but as people are coming out from having had all kinds of experiences during that time of shutdown and change due to the pandemic, it's not a simple transition, and it still isn't, and it won't be as time goes on. And this we all have to think about it as we're thinking about our own lives and those of our loved ones and our neighbors.
And 100 years ago, turning back the pages, Master William Van Dusen has so far recovered as to be able to get about with the aid of crutches.
I mean, that's fantastic. Made the paper, so that's good.
I like that story because I'm using crutches now in between my things on my knees, and so I saw that, so I said, things haven't changed much in 100 years.
That's right. We're all human, and we were then, too.
All right. Lots of letters to the editor before we get to the other columnists. Lots, once again, this week.
Right. And some really interesting ones. Jamie Longy from West Cornwall is writing about the minority representation law that we work with in our Connecticut towns. And so he gives us a really interesting view of it. Don't miss that letter and think about it.
All right, and you've got, of course, Peter Steiner's cartoon, but also a great article by Ralph Nader.
Yes. You know, Ralph Nader does a syndicated column every week, and he is kind enough to share it with the Lakeville Journal whenever we have space for it and want to use it for a dollar a year. And so we're happy to pay that dollar, and it's quite a service he provides. This one is looking at the polarization between the two political parties and how they both work against the public interest. And, boy, he lays it out in a very organized manner. Do not miss that one. And a really fun column from
Michael Duca.
Just read the headline, The Problem with No Problem. And so he's talking about language in a way that if you don't laugh at this, you know,
He's got a great sense of humor, sense of humor.
Definitely.
All right, so now we have about 4.5 minutes left, and we need it because we've got the Compass for Entertainment and the Compass for Arts.
Well, and I'd like to quickly point out, too, the legal notices on page B5. People really need to read the legals. They're very important, and there's two things in here that are sort of embedded quietly. One is that there's this hearing coming up next Monday that I think there's like 50 people on their petition now in the area down around Indian Mountain School, basically, and there's the famous wine collector Park Smith has been applying for an expansion of his property and to do more weddings and other philanthropic things such as workshops on farming. And a lot of people in the neighborhood have been unhappy with the weddings at Lion Rock Farm, and they're afraid that they're going to be now sandwiched in between two wedding venues. So I think that this may be an issue that's going to impact a lot of our area towns, is that for whatever reason, people moving up here want the peace and quiet, but they also want to have, you know, a profit-making center of some kind or some kind of an event on their property. So worth looking at. And also, it looks like there's an accepted offer on the former firehouse in Lakeville, and they're looks like somebody's going to try and turn it into apartments, and I think that would be fabulous to have more affordable housing here. But again, that will be a public hearing coming up, the Planning and Zoning Commission. And then for Compass, in the regular Compass, my favorite writer, Kate Hawkswinder, my daughter, we had done a listing last week of some of the Halloween films that are being shown. There's like film festivals all over with these historic horror films. And my daughter, who's like an encyclopedia of horror films and cinema in general, wrote a really interesting story my opinion, in everybody's opinion, I think, on the history of horror films, how they fit into the larger cinema history. And then I'll let Janet talk about this, but Deb Alexinis put out October's Compass, fabulous stuff that I never would have thought to do. And Janet, do you want to talk about it?
Right. People will recognize Deborah Alexinis' byline. She does a lot of long-form stories for us that take a lot of research, and she was willing to edit this Compass section because, you know, it is fun, and she really got to pull out some friends who are writers, and also covered a lot of things that are fun about autumn. So we have Patrick Sullivan on Preparing for Sweater Weather. Always funny to read Patrick's stories. And we have the Clayway Studio Tour happening next weekend, and chef's recipes celebrating the harvest. And that, those recipes are from Saravan in Amenia and from West Street Cafe in Litchfield. And, so, and boy, they look really good. And home decor, sports, college football, drinks, autumn brews. To warm and refresh beers that are locally brewed, and all kinds of activities. So do not miss this. There's a calendar section that talks about what you can do for day trips, and now's the time to do them because the leaves are finally turning, and, you know, even though it's going to get cooler, that's as it should be for these fall activities, so get out there and enjoy them.
You know, Cynthia, I want to go back to that story about the firehouse in Lakeville. I was watching the video of that meeting, and what concerned me was they talked about apartments on the second floor and just a restaurant on the first floor. And it concerned me thinking, because she's done such a good job with her health center there. I hope that the Green Cafe and the health center is what they're talking about, staying on the bottom floor and not just another restaurant.
I think people really like that cafe.
Yeah, but also I don't want it to be another restaurant and lose the exercise center, because I think that's also been a huge success as well. So, and it wasn't really fully explained at the meeting because it's so early. But I hope the exercise center and the cafe are the ones that stay down there.
Yeah, they're so successful and so necessary that it would be amazing if they did that. You know, I'd like to also say, do not miss the property transfers in the Lakeville Journal. They're sprinkled throughout the paper, and they're always fascinating.
Very. All right. Well, the Lakeville Journal is available in print form, of course, Lakeville Journal, and also on the web, tricornernews.com. And remember, they're now a 501c3 not-for-profit, so when you make a donation, you do get a tax deduction for it. So. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. As I said, you can find the Lakeville Journal at tricornernews.com. And you can find this show at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.